Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and tonight I am proud to announce the launching of a new show, As Above, So Below, with Astrid. Greetings and welcome, Astrid. How are you tonight?
Greetings. Well, I'm trying to get used to the warm weather, which is very atypical of April, particularly in Sussex County. And but that won't last long because, as we say, as above, same below, we're caught like in the middle of this transition. And I've heard so many people say to me, well, I'm not here, but I'm not there. And I'm somewhere, like, I don't know where I am. And an extreme amount of energy that's going on, you know, unbelievable. I said, like, what is going on? I said, there's usually an answer for everything. And I remember last month, it was March 21st, 1:23, and it was the new moon. And new moon signifies new beginnings. But I remember reading a whole synopsis of it for my particular sign, of course. And it said, well, it may be the new moon, which means new beginnings, but you're still caught up with old tidings and things that you need to complete. And I said to myself, you know, this is really interesting because it's very, very typical of what everybody's going through. And I like to think of it as a visual where your core is in the middle and you're doing a swift stride. And one arm and leg is in one portal that you're leaving, and the other one is entering the next one. So, yeah, you're in transition, but really you are experiencing two different portals simultaneously. Whatever changes, even if you're not sure of where you're going, there's change. There's change happening, but yet you're experiencing both at the same time, which makes for an unbelievable electrical charge.
Indeed, so, it does. And I can certainly
understand
what you're saying.
Definitely. And I've seen it with almost everyone I know in different aspects, whether it be financing, you know, their fine personal finances, their jobs, their housing situation. We just have to remember that this is a time of major change, and starting with last month, the changes started rolling like thunder because you had the beginning of the new zodiac sign of Aries starting the whole trip going around again, and you also had the spring equinox, you had that new moon, and I think there's nothing that epitomizes change and says it all, like the spring equinox or star or whatever, you know, like the setting of the seed, setting in the ground. Nothing's happening yet that we can see, but you are setting the seed of change within the ground, within the earth, in preparation for what is to come. So you still are here and you're there. And it's just so true for all. We also have coming up a lot of astronomical things going on. It's just unbelievable. The energy is like, whoa. You know, we had, I think it was last week, a day where we had a series of planets lined up with the moon. We didn't see it here because of the fact that it was very cloudy and rainy. But we also had major planetary shifts. I think it was the 20th or 26th. We had three planetary shifts, including Pluto, which is a big thing because Pluto hardly moves, and it entered Aquarius. The last time Pluto changed signs was in 2008, which actually back then ushered in an era of economic insecurity for quite a while. Let's hope that as this changes and enters Aquarius, that it swings the other way, more positive energy, and I would hope more people willing to stand up for what they know is ethical rather than the things we've seen going on for like a decade of total disregard of ethics and conduct and subjectivity. I guess that's the best way of putting it. Total subjectivity, you know, my way or the highway. You know, it doesn't matter if it's legal, but this is the what I want to say. It doesn't matter if it's not a truth, but I'm going to say it so I get the end result that I want. And I'm hoping it swings the other way. The sun entered Aries, which is the first sign of the zodiac, as I said before, at the spring equinox. Mars moved into Cancer and the 26th, the end of March. So there are all these things going on. And as I mentioned, Pluto's entry, it's considered the granddaddy of all transits and the most, most important planetary shift of the year, maybe even the decade. Of course, we had the full pink moon, which was very intense. That was on the 6th. We had Easter, the 9th. We'd had Passover, Easter, and Ramadan all about the same time. So there is so much going on in the atmosphere. How could it not have an effect on the energy ourselves, not only the planet and the weather, because the weather has been so bizarre all over the country, all over. I mean, I just can't believe this shift and move back and forth with the weather. And spring always has, you know, that, you know, the warmer, some warmth coming and then the cooler nights, but never to this extent, never. So very interesting. Not in my lifetime anyway, Hercules.
Well, not in mine either. These are interesting times, and you're right. It's in between time. It's a being in two worlds time. It's letting go and at the same time embracing the base of the best of the past and moving forward into the future. It's a very busy time for everybody.
Extremely so. And then we have the solar eclipse next week. We will not, you know, be seeing it, but it doesn't. The energy is still there. Mercury is going to turn retrograde. It does turn forward on Mother's Day, I'm so happy to say, and also my birthday. So that was a good thing. And we have the lunar eclipse at the end of the month, which is in Scorpio, highly volatile. So, wow, 2 months of unbelievable energy. And it's understandable that there is so much going on within people. As you know, we have a dear friend of ours who was going back and forth. You know, we've had a stroke situation, very unexpected, you know, a nurse no less from an OR. And she has been going back and forth in the sense of the hospital to the rehab, back to the hospital, now in a really excellent rehab. But again, this transition back and forth, being in the middle, not quite going into the next phase, you know, actually partially being back in the other phase. And it makes for a lot of frustration for people. We have another friend of ours who had to end up dealing with being without his residence and, you know, now living in a hotel and is in transit. As we say, you know, not in one place or not in the other, not in the next, in that midpoint. And you have to think that there has to be some kind of lesson for us. When all this energy, there's this push and pull, that there has to be some life lesson that we're unaware of. Maybe it's a matter of a pause and experiencing one without jumping into the other, feeling both simultaneously. You know, it could be that I had a long discussion with someone, and I always think about the Akashic Records, Hercules.
Uh-huh.
And where does that put us? You know, when everything's written down in this big book. But I was talking to someone, they said, well, if it's there, then you don't have a choice. I said, no. You always have a choice. That's the whole thing about karma. And it's how you affect it, because all those choices are there within the Akashic Records, and how you're going to approach it, what you're going to do, what you have been, what you are, and what you will be. You know, it's all there.
It is all there. And where I am currently is, again, the realization of mortality. to a very great degree, and that's not making me morose or anything, but I'm here. I have to live life to the fullest, so I've been leaning towards, as I feel more tired, I've been leaning towards what is the coolest thing I could think of doing and how can I do it, you know, so that's where I am right now. So very much in between worlds, very much part of my old world, part of the new world, very much a part of ends and beginnings. And so again, I resonate with all of the words that you've shared.
And it's interesting you mentioned, you know, the whole mortality thing, because I picked up on a YouTube video that was about NDE, you know, near-death experience.
Right.
And this one, of course, I tried to pull it up before because I wanted to let our listeners know, you know, what this particular one was and how this man wrote this book. And it was an experience he had as a teenager. And maybe some of our listeners will be aware of this, or they can find it. But he is an older man now, but when he was younger, he had an experience where he was in this lake. They were all in a lake, and he was drowning. He went down, and he was drowning. He could actually look up and see them above the water looking and hear them. And as he went further and further down, he was petrified, like, this is it. You know, I have to try and swim to the surface. And yet he heard this voice saying, no, it's okay. It's okay. Just go with this. You know, let it be. And he's answering. He's having a conversation saying, no, I'm not ready to die yet. And I don't want this. I have to fight life. And he said, you will return. And as he's going through this, he has this near-death experience is what had happened. And he said he could feel himself leaving his body.
Mm-hmm.
And he was going through a tunnel, and he saw a series of lights. And all of these lights, you know, were flickering, and he realized that he was one of the lights. And at that point, he said there was total calmness, no fear, nothing. And he said he had all knowledge of everything. And he said, everything is one, and all the things that go on here were just like acts in a play. And that this was the reality, that, you know, the thing that people fear the most is actually the opposite of what most people feel, that this is their life, they're afraid to let go because this is what is meaningful. And the fear of the unknown, you know, and you're dead. Meanwhile, he said, everything, there was no differentiation. We were all the same. All the light energy was the same. And he said it was the most unbelievable experience. At that point, he was getting really comfortable with it and felt so serene. He is being told that he needs that it's going to, he will return, and he remembers that. Now he does not want to return. And as he, you know, he's fighting the return. He's like, no, this is just so beautiful, and why would I want to go back to that, where there's so much conflict and pain? And then he's told again, no, you will return. And what he remembers next is that he is on the shoreline, and his friends, at that time there wasn't CPR, because I think this happened in the early 50s, they were pumping the water out of his lungs, and he comes back. He doesn't know how he got to the shore. He doesn't remember any of that. And they asked him what happened, but he kept the secret to himself. And it wasn't until much later in life. And he said he never forgot that experience, but he said that he felt it was imperative that he write his thoughts down, and he published this book. Now, I have to find this book and read it. But this sounds very similar, Hercules, to all the other things that I've heard other people say in terms of a tunnel, the light, and that when they, you know, there's this calmness, and as they're being brought back, whether it be on the operating table or whatever situation it is, they really didn't want to come back.
Yeah, I've had an NDE, and I didn't want to come back initially. But then I thought about it, and it's like, no, I do want to go back. There's like a million different things I wanted to do that I haven't done yet. So I want to go back. And then I realized as I was coming back that it was my choice. So I couldn't complain about life. I chose to be here.
Well, there you go. You know, again, it's that we do have choice. And then it always comes down to that little swing back and forth of the pendulum, and where they say, well, you really weren't ready to die yet, or that maybe you have more to do in life. There's like a certain goal, karmic thing that you're supposed to do that you haven't completed yet. And you can also see in terms of the fact that you have to lay the groundwork for your next lifetime. So you haven't really completed everything that you need to do, because there are certain elements that have to be set in place so that you can be ready for the next step. Or like an actor, you know your lines for the play and or whatever, and have your everything set, the stage set. And that's a perfect way of explaining it. You know, having the stage set for the next act.
And you're one of the few people I know who also does that, because I do that all the time. It's like I hypnotize myself to remember, because I remember in this life a bunch of things. Some of them I don't know why I remember them, but I did. So, I remind myself now of things that I learned in this life, so I don't have to do them over again next life, and which people are important, which type of things I felt I should be focusing on. And I work on that very often. So I remember one day we got into a conversation, you said you were doing that. It was like, I'm not alone in planning my next life all the time.
Right. And sometimes you're given these, you know, so much is embedded in our DNA that we have no explanation for. And you and I have talked about things that had thoughts that were in our mind, or certain memories within us that had no explanation to us then. You know, like why is it this way, or why was I drawing a little star, a moon and a star, you know, and why was I singing songs to the Pleiades when I was like a little child? And it's not till you're much older that, and hopefully not with all of us, sometimes it takes many lifetimes to put the puzzle pieces together. But, you know, why do these little puzzle pieces come along? And hopefully they will play into some form of a puzzle in your lifetime that you can make sense and have a vision. Puzzle is all about.
Very, very true. And the world is a place full of synchronicities. So the universe does talk to you if you pay attention all the time. It's hard to shut the universe up, actually. The universe is always...
Well, true. We spoke about what is time, you know, and that, how relevant is it, and then how we communicate nonverbally without even realizing it. It was a beautiful day. We're looking out at the lake yesterday. And I somehow we ended up in the discussion of our dear friend that has a restaurant up in Matamoros, PA,
uh-huh.
who was an interviewee for us here when we talked about the pandemic and how he managed to get through it. That was Peter's Europa. And he's a really dear friend, as well as an amazing restaurateur and chef. And we had gone there for Easter. But we were just discussing different things related to the restaurant, and I said, well, it's a point when he's looking to sell the restaurant, and this is something we were aware of. He's looking to make some life changes. And later that day, as we're sitting with Robin in you know, the new rehab, another dear friend of ours pulls, she's doing things online to rectify some of the insurance issues for our friends.
Yeah.
And she said, look at this, because I am not on Facebook. And it was a post by Peter. And he's talking about how he's made the decision. He went public with it. He's made the decision that it's time after 17 years to sell the restaurant and to make a major change in his life due to the fact that he's had health issues that he's able to have pushed to the wayside over the years. But he really feels now that, you know, he's entered a new decade, that he needs to make a major change within his life. And I'm sure there were people that were utterly shocked. And it's going to be a loss, of course, when he does, because he's just talking about the intent to sell. He's not talking about having sold it. But this is, and I had to write him back saying, you know, it starts with the thought. And from the thought, we make a decision, and then we say it or write it, and now it moves closer to reality. And and that's how it is. You know, we're in a spot. Sometimes we're not sure where we're going. And as I say, you have one arm and leg in one portal. Your core is standing up, but you're already reaching with your other arm and leg to enter the next one. And you don't know exactly where you're going, but you know that it is time for a change. Sometimes it's not willing. In this case, it's willing for Peter, but a willingness. There have been quite a few people that have been put in situations. Another dear friend of ours with a mother with a nursing home and had finally found a nice person to take care of the mom, and all of a sudden the woman abruptly is not there, which sends our dear friend, you know, Sheila, into mayhem, because now everything has to be restructured. And rather than looking at it from our own point of view, we have to realize that we are not the only one that is experiencing this being in between and getting energy from both sides, that this woman obviously had to be somewhere else, had to make a major life decision, or did it abruptly, who knows. But that's what makes it so, the energy so frenetic. So we have to always remind ourselves, it's not just us that's going through this. And we see it in our personal lives, as I said. We see it extend even further, you know, into the area around us. And I still have a very hard time with the fact that we are supposedly one nation, but yet each state gets to govern certain very important laws and beliefs in a very different way, which does not unify us. You know, and we've seen, again, another shooting, you know, mass murders again, other issues like this, and that division within this nation, whereas, you know, no, this is a right, we have to maintain it. And now we're seeing more and more the push to say, this is not acceptable. Children, you know, all out walkouts saying, you know, we don't feel safe. And what about the adults that are supposed to be governing us? So we are seeing this, you know, again, people that normally wouldn't speak out, speaking out, you know, moving into the other portal, not just, you know, standing by and letting someone else do it, where some will justify what happened on January 6th as being people fighting for their rights, yet when three representatives in Tennessee had something to say about it, they were expelled from their seats. Expelled. And yet, as that happened one day, we see the pendulum swing the other way. Again, people standing up, their own locality saying, no, we want them back in. So now they will have an election to get them back in, which I found, and I think most people found, you know, enlightening in the fact that people are not going, there are people that will not tolerate it now, that will say, no, it can't be your way. You cannot choose the situation. It can't be that you're speaking out about you know, having, talking about massive protests that were against the election and try to, well, it wasn't a matter of trying, it actually caused bodily harm, and it was against the Constitution. And yet, when people fight for their rights or are vocal about the fact that we can't allow this to happen anymore, are expelled from the seat that they were voted into, you know, it's amazing, Hercules.
It is amazing, and it points to some questions that we need to ask about our system. How can a handful of individuals on the Supreme Court reverse Roe versus Wade? It's just a handful of individuals. How can a judge newly appointed, just one person, stop the process of giving women safe abortifacts if they need it?
And not only that, Hercules, but also say that you will be paralyzed if you go to another state or if a doctor offers something for a poor woman that has a situation where it miscarries. You know, now we're talking about not having access to a pill because, you know, and again, it's just a matter of personal belief, but you're not upholding the beliefs of the people that voted them in, which is something we really need to start thinking about in terms of the Supreme Court. Because I'm sure there are people on both sides of the fence that say, well, if it goes too much one way, then the laws are changed. And then if it goes the other way, it swings the other way in terms of, because you have that position until death. What position? Who has that position that you would have it for life? Unbelievable. And we see now Senator Feinstein, they're talking 89 years old. You have two of her own progressives from California say, you know, if you can't even be there, what is the point of holding the seat? Because you're not being effectual. You're not there to vote. So we'll see what happens with that. I thought that was interesting, too. So we are seeing people that are saying you've got to start looking at the way things are done. It can't be subjective. It has to be objective and looking at what's good for the nation, not for the state. Not for the state. I'm sorry. The state thing, you know, you hear about, oh, well, the state. And then you hear someone like Ron DeSantis say, well, I'm pushing, and I think he did push it already, not only could you carry guns on you, you don't need a permit.
I heard that.
How many mass murders? You want to give people the right to carry weapons on you without a permit? I don't know. You know, the laws are too varied when it comes to that. And I think you have to start looking at why we want to go to that extent when you have to have a permit and take a test and have points against you if you get a car, if you're driving a car. That's considered, you know, deadly if you don't know what you're doing. And yet you're going to allow someone to have weapons without having any kind of training, a test, or looking at a database for mental capacity. I don't know. And that's a matter of responsibility, too, because there are situations where we've seen that parents did not, they enabled their child. They did not stop things. They actually allowed them to have the guns, or they knew there were extenuating circumstances. And I understand it has to be very difficult to watch your child go through all this. But when your child is almost an adult and you see that they have the capacity to damage and take other lives, you know, where is your responsibility? So
they have actually persecuted or prosecuted, or I forget which word means what, the parents of several shooters who were late teens, early 20s.
That one in particular where the they called the school, you know, the school had called the parents and said, you know, there's an issue, and they say he has a gun in the book bag, and they're like, well, they wanted them to come pick him up. They refused to do it, and the school administrator let it go, and that's when that child, you know, was involved with shooting. And you're right, there are quite a few of them where that happened, and you have to look at it in terms of not just the home situation, but the local authorities, because quite a few times the local sheriff and their little department allowed it to continue after parents had called several times to intercede. And besides that, there are situations where, like, they'll say, no, we don't want to infringe on their rights, without thinking about what could possibly happen in the future. And again, that has to do not only with state laws, but also the locality. You know, what happens within a local district? What is allowable by the people, the power that have the powers that be?
And also, it's very disheartening that we're back to, as a society, creating marginalized groups out of people who share the planet with us, and then making it very dangerous for the marginalized groups to be who they are. And whenever that starts happening in history, it does not lead to good things. And,
and how many mass murders have there been already this year? The number was astounding. It was like 147, something like that. But and this does not involve, you know, like just minor shootings. And I'm saying minor, but I'm saying squabbles. But people that just decide they've had it, and they're going to make people pay what it is. And every time I hear this, it brings me back this situation or people in power that are going on and on and on that are obviously lying and twisting the truth to meet a certain end, you know the end result. So, well, I want it to be this way, so this is what I'm going to do. And it makes me think back to kindergarten with the little boys rolling on the floor. This is my perfect analogy. Fighting over who has the largest and pointiest crayon. You know, I don't want this. I want that crayon. You know, and just, you know, the power of the will and physical strength, and where you'd have to say, no, it's not acceptable. Now, neither one of you are going to have it, you know, and that's not what it's about. It's not about the power issue here.
So what
but
do we do about that? What do we do about it?
You know, that's kindergarten.
We try to live lives.
The thing is that we'd hope as adults we've gotten past that. But unfortunately, you know, we've seen a situation happen in this nation whereas it was okay to call people names. It was okay to breach ethics and conduct with a debate. Never did we ever see that. It was okay to call people names. You know, and why? What was the point of it? What is the point of it? Because if you were in school and that happened, that is considered bullying, and the teacher has to write up a report, and you were sent to the guidance counselor if you're consistently doing it. Yet it was acceptable in this nation to allow that to happen. And the only thing, there are two ways of looking at it. You can look at it and say, well, if we ignore it, it'll go away. Guess what? That's not the case. When you have that kind of abject behavior and you ignore it, it escalates. Anybody in education can tell you that, you know, in law enforcement, whatever. And then the other thing is there were people that reveled in it because it gave them permission to act the same way, which is exactly what happened. All of a sudden, name calling was okay. being, you know, racist or sexist. You know, you can think whatever you want, but the intent, there are laws set in place, and, you know, the intent, and then actually carrying it out and doing some of these abhorrent behavior, you know, some of these things, and because what does someone's sexuality have to do with another person? Why does that affect another human being? That's another thing. People, you know, the communities that are not heterosexual have been so abused as well, with not just name calling but beatings, and, you know, out and out discrimination and viciousness with laws and book banning. That's another thing, you know, the book banning, and it's like the pendulum swing is that portal to this portal, that portal to this portal, you know, and you just hope that somewhere along the line there's some sanity.
But the good old days that some of these folks are trying to bring back were good old days, maybe, for people like them, but not for everybody else. For everybody else, there were hellish days. So they're trying to create, they're trying to recreate a past that never existed the way they remember it. And in the interim, they're creating hells for everybody else. So what do we do, Astrid? How do we, I know you more so than me are politically involved and active in your community. You also have a voice and you express your voice in many different ways, not just on the show, but in your community. What do we do to make things better? Because there's so many things that need to be fixed.
I have hope in the sense that I think there is a new generation that is not going to tolerate it. You know, I think so many got so tired and they're not willing to speak up some, they're just tired. They've had it with the fighting. But there are much younger people that are not willing to accept this, that don't want a future where the weather patterns are so horrific and that corporations are making, you know, using super funds to do this and that, and meanwhile, you know, pollute the whole planet, and just because they would rather have their profit factor going. And I think as they step up more and they vote and they're more vocal, you're going to see change. You will. And as people definitely vote, like there was these city councils in these areas where these two particular representatives were expelled from their jobs after they were voted in because the majority decided they didn't want them protesting. It was wrong for them to protest about guns and the deaths that occurred, you know, these massive deaths. Well, then their own local government voted them, said, no, we want them back in, and then they're going to, you know, they walked back in. Well, one did, and then today the next one did. So, I mean, there is, can only hope that it continues. You know, it's not going to be stabilized because it'll always be, you know, once you push one way, there's a push the other way. But it did start way back, I think, of Greta when she got very vocal and went around, you know, the whole global situation with making people aware and saying it isn't right what's going on with the environment. You know, we want a future. Yeah, and then what happened? They, you know, there were politicians that went on and said that, you know, well, what is she? Oh, she's got, you know, issues, and what about, they attacked her. You know, it was unbelievable. It really was. So, but then it continued. One voice starts, then another voice starts. And again, like I said, the Tennessee GOP expelled the two from the State House for peacefully protesting gun violence. They were actually, and it has to be brought up about the fact, because it happened in their own state, in Nashville, with the shooting. And so they said, enough, enough. You know, this is ridiculous. and they weren't going to stand by idly as the politicians blocked any progress on gun violence prevention. But there were three. There were not two. Two got expelled. The third person happened to be a white female, older woman. She was not expelled. So we see here, all right, she had votes against her, but she still wasn't expelled. They opted to expel the two African Americans and not her. And where they were making a point, what they did is they got pushback, and the pendulum came their way. Whereas, again, you know, one representative was voted back in, and the second one was today. So now let's see what happens. And it has come down to the conduct of ethics and conduct. You know, there's codes, code of conduct and ethics. I'm still trying to figure out why that doesn't exist for the Supreme Court.
Yeah, we live in an age of information, and information comes to us a lot faster than it used to. And
that's true.
Because there are people with different perspectives, you get different versions of the same, you know, story, and it's hard sometimes to tell what version is more accurate than another, so you could pick and choose the version that you want
Right, but we have to also cross-check and do multiple sources.
Yeah.
You know, and there is the Freedom of Information Act as well. Well, Politico had a major breakthrough, the news, with Clarence Thomas. And one of the biggest donors, Mega Money, was showering him with trips, you know, for 20 years. And there are senators and local judges, but I guess, you know, not Supreme Court, because you have to be very careful. And it's called that you have to make your donations, any donors or any donations supposed to be public. That also got altered with Citizens United in terms of how much money and how it could be presented. People could be hide behind certain cloaks rather than admit how much money they're donating and where the money's coming from. But, you know, how you can be a member of the Supreme Court and make major decisions, as you had said before, in terms of, you know, Roe versus Wade and other landmark hearings that they do, and not declare that you're taking money from someone who is definitely affecting the way your vote is going. Yeah, how could it not? It's called extortion or bribe. In plain English, that's what it's called. And
well,
you can say someone is your friend, but why would you not recuse yourself from making certain decisions? Because that's what you have to do.
Well, that's the question, but you're right. The answer that they gave, both of them, the donor and the acceptor of donations, said that they're friends. And you don't, like, you give your friend things because they're your friends. And that was the story of the
day. Take them on trips, yes, you know, use of planes, this, that. And I'm sure there are others that have done it to a smaller extent, because there have been cases that I'm aware of where they've accepted things that they shouldn't have. Because once you're involved with law and setting law in place and voting legally, you have to recuse yourself. If someone's even a relative, you know, a local board of education, someone's a relative and they're looking for a job, or you know someone through someone else or through a corporation, you have to publicly recuse yourself, from that vote at a public meeting, and you have to statewide. And yeah, and that small time, you start going up to the level of you know, Congress, and even more so Supreme Court, you should be beyond reproach. You're supposed to be doing things by the letter of the law. Yet Clarence Thomas is, you know, we have the issue of his wife who was involved with January 6th. Nothing much happened with that. And, you know, this is when you wonder, like, where is that when?
You're breaking in and out, Astrid. Astrid, are you moving around or something? You're breaking in and out.
Am I better now?
You're better now.
I better stay in this one position. It's Sussex County. What can I tell you? You know, and the wrong side of Route 206 because there's only one Verizon tower on the side and there's mountain ranges. But, yeah, so, again, it's a matter of, you know, I've heard people say, well, it benefits me, so it's okay that they do it. That doesn't make it legal. And that's where the problem starts to come in. You know, it's like you can't – there are times we have our bodies in two portals, but in the end – we are moving forward or that we slide backwards. We don't stay in the two. You know, you have to, and it's the same with people. You know, we have to come to a point where we say, this may be what benefits me, but it's not fair to others. You know, it's not what group should have to worry about being pulled out of their car and beaten because they have a particular skin color. And I've heard people say, oh, that doesn't happen. Maybe not where you live, or maybe you choose not to believe that it happens. And I have to say that one representative who was not expelled in Tennessee took the high ground and said, publicly, this is not right. The three of us stood up and voiced our dissent for our constituency. They're tired of seeing people die needlessly. Yet
right.
They, because they're a different skin color, were expelled, and I wasn't. And it's wrong.
Good for that person who
right.
said that.
And she could have very well said, well, it wasn't me, not my problem, I didn't get expelled. But she didn't. So, you know, there are more and more now who are standing up and saying, you know, there is a code of ethics we're supposed to be following. And it comes down to the good old golden rule of, you know, what you don't want done to you should not be doing to others, and guess what? You shouldn't be standing by and watching it either.
So other than speaking out and other than basically operating from an ethical standpoint and voting, you had always advocated the use of petitions. Now, I had questions about
petitions. I was just going to say that, and there's a multitude of them out there. A multitude. You just have to go. You could even just go online. I like to use DuckDuckGo rather than Google because, you know, they're not selling my information and passing it on, and I can just erase things. You can even just look for different petitions related to what you feel is something you would like to stand by and do it. And then don't just sign it. Pass it along. You know, you're not forcing people. People have the right to say, well, I really don't want to get involved with another petition. Fine. But it's your option. You can, people that you know that feel strongly about certain things that you think might be interested in knowing the information, sharing information, do it. And then when it comes time to vote, do it. And then also if it means contacting your representatives, you should do that too. You know, and say, well, I have a problem with donors. I have a problem with this or that. It's amazing in terms of how laws get started to come up for a vote to the House of Representatives. And we are lucky up here. We do have Josh Gottheimer, who is very involved You can always contact him if you're a Sussex County resident. He is amazing in the sense that he, you contact him, he gets involved. He does. He listens.
He works with everybody. He doesn't get caught up in the blame game. He,
thank you. Bipartisanship, and that's how it should be. Working together for the good of the constituency and making people's lives better. People are very frustrated. You know, and we went through this, you know, with our dear friend, too, with trying to get in touch with people, trying to get things moving in terms of insurance and getting people to know what's going on. Well, you know, here's someone. Don't use AI to find out how many days she should be allowed to be in the hospital or she can't be in this rehab. And then there was somebody on Manipur last night that was phenomenal. A doctor was talking about hospitals and how care has not moved up. There's no continuity. So if you're in the hospital, you're being treated, and then you go to some kind of a other setting, it doesn't continue. And the follow-up isn't.
Can you, Astrid?
Am I still here?
Now you're here.
Okay. So, you know, the area, you know, we can see that. So, but here was a doctor who spoke out when it does work and how it works. And hopefully there'll be more and more people that do that. During the pandemic, so many things came to light about healthcare and insurance and, you know, the plight of the worker and how workers' rights were being violated. Bernie Sanders fighting for the rights of unions and bringing up the fact that how many corporations are spending mega millions on the same money that they could be paying these employees for benefits or paying them a decent wage. No. And Bezos was number one, double-digit millions for a consulting fee to make sure that unions did not survive or did not happen in at Amazon. So putting it out there, putting that information out there and sharing it. And like I said, the Freedom of Information Act, and I'm going through the open records, you know, Bernie brought it to the floor. There were 10 particular corporations that were spending double digits, consulting firms, to make sure unions did not happen.
Yeah, we're going backwards in a lot of different areas in our life.
But then it's up to us to say, okay, if that's the case, let me see what makes these people rich. And with the Koch brothers, you know, we made it a business, you know, our union members made it a business to find out all the businesses, you know, on the show.
I'm losing you, Astrid. You're fading.
Oh, I guess we're just having problems here because now I'm in the same spot. Well, we're pretty much to the end, but what I'll say is that it's up to us.
That's right.
To say, well, it may be convenient for me to do this and that, but is it fair to the people that work in those corporations? I mean, as you know, I will not, and I understand the ease of buying from Amazon. I cannot ethically buy from them the horrible man that he is and how he treats his workers. I will not, and how he's had put smaller businesses, purposely targeted small businesses, and put them out of business and then bought their facility. So I have a very hard time with someone like him. When Walmart was treating its workers terrifically, you know, refused to unionize them, and there was like horrible situations there, I would not go there. And I think these are things that we have to start stepping up and saying, yeah, it's convenient. There's certain things that I like, but it makes my life easier. But is it them and make them rich when they do these things? So. There are little things, and as I said, a restaurateur that treats their employees horribly, or whatever, don't go there. People that treat their employees beautifully, frequent them. Small businesses rather than major, huge major corporations. There are little ways we can do things.
So let's find those little ways and share them, like you shared several ways tonight.
That's right. That's right. And then not to, you know, and then again, to keep our feet on the ground, be grounded, but there's no reason why we can't soar high in the sky. You know, we have to use all those elements and use them in unified to make us who we are.
Now, how can people get in contact with you, Astrid?
Through you right now, but then we're also going to get the hooking up with Alignable as well, which is a networking site. And speaking of Alignable, we have someone who was a guest on your show last year, I think it was, Dr. Catherine Cortidis.
I remember her.
And she is amazing. I mean, we say doctor, and she has many doctorates and masters. Brilliant woman. Teaches physics, taught here, taught there, worked in business, also teaches at high school. She is an unbelievable writer. We interviewed her about her AJK anthology. She was in the process of writing the first book that was a translation of her father's manuscripts. She is now, she just completed two more books. She completed another anthology related to her dad called The Price of Passion. And the third of a series, the Josette and Daniel, book one and two, she has the final book. And she will be telling us about the process.
Awesome.
That will be next month. They're out in publication. They're being published this month. And you can get her books, Dr. Catherine Cortidis, her books on Broad Street Books in Branchville, which is great. And you can pretty much order them anywhere. I like to use the smaller bookstores
Yes. And
order direct to keep them in business. And you know Broad Street Books because I know you have gone there often. And there's a nice little...
Every month.
Right. And then also the Sparta Bookshop is really nice, like in Center Street. That's a nice little bookshop too. But you can order it direct, and I intend to order the one book and read, because the father's anthology, the AJK anthology, was amazing. The format was amazing. She is an amazing woman. And it's so nice to see someone who has accomplished so much in her life, yet is so humble.
Mm.
She is a very humble person. I mean, as I read all that she's done, I'm like, wow. And not to say that we are not of the same, and our listeners as well. We all accomplish a lot, but it's so nice to see someone that is, you know, just so humble about it. That it's just, well, I did this and I did that, and is so proud of her father, and it was a tribute of love. So I'm very excited because we had a wonderful interview with her previous time, and I'm really looking forward to hearing her journey with these two books.
And I'm glad you're interviewing next month. We've run out of time. Astrid, thank you. It's always a pleasure and an honor speaking with you. I'm looking forward to
our next conversation,
and thank you for all that you do for us.
Oh, my pleasure, and thanks to all who are out there listening.
And thanks to all our listeners, as Astrid said. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. Thanks again, Astrid.
Good night.
Good night.